You are listening to K Writes Radio, where the truth continues. On the line with me, Dr. Stephen Baskerville. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. There's a lot of things going on, which is good.
Let's talk about your new article, Violence Against Families, Fathers Fall Victim to Domestic Abuse Laws. You talking here about the feminist playing the victim card.
A lot of people know that our politics today in some ways have degenerated into a competition for government handouts, government goodies, all paid for by the taxpayer. There was a time when government was, the purpose of government was to protect people for the most part and to secure national defense and domestic order. But government has become a kind of provider of goodies for large groups of people. So naturally we have large numbers of interest groups that are competing for this money. So in this case, the Violence Against Women Act, which purports to be a crime bill, in theory should outlaw violent crime, is in fact a $4 billion pork and patronage bill, which will provide a lot of money for a lot of privileged people. Rather than simply outlawing a particular crime, we pay people and distribute money in largesse to local governments. The bill provides money for community groups, for local governments, for law enforcement agencies, in some cases for universities, for a whole assortment of people feeding at the trough.
You use the term victim politics. Elaborate on that.
Well, at one time there was to be a victim of a crime was a fairly clear and straightforward definition. Nowadays, a victim can be any assortment of things. In the domestic violence advocacy groups, for example, a victim can be somebody who sustains what is referred to as verbal abuse or emotional abuse or psychological abuse. These terms are not well defined at all. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily the victim of a crime at all or the victim of a violent crime at all. It just means that somebody's done something you don't like or find annoying or whatever. So the definition of a victim has become subjective. It varies. It's become very loose and unclear, and this makes a travesty of the law.
VAWA also appeals to a mom and apple pie sentiment, as you talk about in here. Is that a big problem with what we are seeing here with the way that VAWA is being presented?
Well, yes, it is. Obviously, it's politically hazardous for any politician to vote against something that's advertised or marketed as being to oppose violence against women or violence against children or anyone like that. And no politician is going to oppose it, or very few anyway, only the most courageous. But in fact, it's a bill that essentially exists to distribute money. It's not clear that we need to distribute large amounts of money to people to oppose crimes. We have laws against violent crime. We have provisions for locking up people who commit violent acts against other people. It's against the law, of course, in every jurisdiction in America and everywhere else, for that matter. Why do we need a specific law labeled violence against women? Violence against women is already against the law, just like violence against everybody else. What this bill does is, like most congressional bills, it's a matter of money. It gives people money. It buys political power. It rewards privileged groups. It buys favors. It puts people in a state of dependency on the federal government and gives people a stake, a livelihood from the federal government, and creates interest groups and lobbies that work to get more money out of the federal government. So it's under the guise of a crime bill. It's, in fact, another pork and patronage bill.
The left is very unpopular in America. How do they continue to advance even among their unpopularity?
Well, that's a good question. What we've seen in the case of the feminist movement in particular is the shift away from the issues which they are unpopular on, issues like abortion or Title IX or the standard items on the feminist agenda. And they've shifted into areas where they can get support from conservatives or from traditional people who are not necessarily informed about what they're hearing. They claim to be champions of women, champions of children, champions of motherhood, champions of abused children and poor children and oppressed children and women. And it's very difficult for politicians to oppose this. It's very difficult for people to oppose these sound bites, these slogans. So what they've done is they've tried to, you've got a kind of camouflage here, where left-wing groups, especially by far the most important of which is feminists, are disguising themselves in traditional values. What they're really doing, though, in this case, is they're not really championing traditional values. They're politicizing traditional values. They're turning them over to the control of the state so that, you know, you have in the Violence Against Women Act, it's a kind of chivalry, but it's not the chivalry of men for women or even individuals for other individuals. It's the chivalry of government bureaucrats who, of course, increase their power and their funding and their remuneration by claiming to be the champions of the underdog and the oppressed. And in fact, what they're doing is they're well paid for posing as the champions of the oppressed and the underdog. And this is how tyrannies develop.
Does this mean domestic violence has become an industry?
Oh, yes. It's a huge industry. Yes. In fact, the Violence Against Women Act is not the only federal appropriation for domestic violence, but it's certainly one of the biggest and one of the broadest. It spreads largesse throughout the federal government through the and local and state and local government as well. It's money given through the Department of Justice, through the Department of Health and Human Services, and this filters down to state and local governments. So state and local governments and community groups and all these various people who receive the money, in effect, they become extensions of the federal government. They become administrative arms implementing federal policy and federal spending.
Feminists and social scientists agree there is a phenomena, abuse and domestic violence growing in separated families, and the biggest perpetrators is single mothers. How in the world can we justify a bill like VAWA when statistics like that are sitting on the table?
Well, that's it. You put your finger on that, actually. There's a huge amount of misinformation and misconceptions about domestic violence. The most common, which is being campaigned for now, many men's groups are pointing out that men are also victims of domestic violence, and it's not just women. But there's actually a lot of other misconceptions as well that are just as important, if not more so. You kind of put your finger on it when you said that most domestic violence actually takes place not in intact families, but in separated and divorced families. So an intact family is actually a very safe place for women and children. And most fathers, most husbands are far from abusive and not abusive. Most domestic violence incidents take place during or after the separation, and they're usually connected with child custody. So violence between couples and violence in the home usually has to do with the family breaking up, and I'm fairly certain, I can't prove this exactly, that it all has to do with, well, it is fairly clear, actually, that it has to do with child custody, with disputes over who's grabbing the children. And then, of course, as you say, once the family is broken up and the children are, in most cases, left with the single mother and sometimes with the single mother and her paramour, her boyfriend, that is the environment where they are most likely to be abused. So creating single mother homes under the guise of preventing domestic violence or violence against women is in fact creating huge amounts of violence against children. It is creating precisely the environment where children are most likely to be abused. So it's like many federal programs, unfortunately, it is having precisely the opposite effect of what is being advertised. It is creating the problem which it claims to be addressing.
Does VAWA blur the distinction between an actual violent crime and just a simple disagreement?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, VAWA didn't start that. That goes on throughout the domestic violence community. But it does fund groups that define domestic violence, not necessarily in terms of violent crime or recognized criminal acts, but in terms of any kind of conflict, verbal conflict as well as physical conflict, between what are called intimate partners. So, name-calling, insults is considered abuse. The very term domestic abuse, you'll often find this rather than domestic violence. Domestic abuse, because it's an admission that much of these incidents are not violent at all. They're simply arguments. They're just the stuff of lovers' quarrels. And yet they're being labeled as violence, as if they are crimes, and in fact people are taken away for them in handcuffs, arrested and put in jail, oftentimes without trial. So yes, it's a very, very dangerous blurring of this distinction. At one time we had a distinction between what was a crime and what was not a crime, but that that distinction really doesn't exist anymore. And this is the foremost example of that.
Wasn't VAWA on his face declared unconstitutional?
Yes, there was an element of VAWA. That's not the part that is in dispute right now in this new federal bill. But yes, there was an aspect of VAWA that was declared unconstitutional, the Berzon-Kala case, involving the federal principle. I think that principle could and should have been expanded even further. It was very narrowly ruled, as I recall. But there is no real federal mandate. There's no constitutional authority for the federal government to be involved in domestic violence at all. Crime has traditionally been a matter for state and local governments to regulate and to punish. VAWA is part of a very disturbing, dangerous trend that's going on throughout this country of federalizing crime, of creating federal police forces, sometimes plainclothes police forces, sometimes police forces that are not called police. People who are called bureaucrats or civil servants are in fact taking on police powers, social workers taking on police powers. So it not only blurs the distinction between crime and conflict, it blurs the distinction between civilian and law enforcement federal officials, and it is increasingly transferring police power from local and state governments to the federal government.
There was a comment made by Judge Richard Russell, New Jersey Municipal Court judge, and his comment was, your job is not to become concerned about constitutional rights of the man that you're violating as you grant a restraining order. And then also he continued to go on, throw him out on the street, give him the clothes on his back, and tell him, see you around. How can we keep judges like this on the bench, and how is this attitude allowed to prevail?
Well, yes, it's very shocking. Here's a judge admitting that he is ignoring and violating, not only ignoring, but violating the constitutional rights of innocent people and urging his fellow judges to do likewise. If you read the extended article that is from, he makes no apologies for it. He insists upon it over and over again of ignoring the Constitution, ignoring the process of constitutional judicial review, and simply violating the Bill of Rights, and urging others to do the same. It's amazing. It's placing the judiciary on the side of lawbreakers. People who are concerned about the power of the judiciary, people who are concerned about the federalization of police powers and the violation of civil rights should be very concerned about VAWA and the whole domestic violence industry, because it is the cutting edge of this trend of destroying the Bill of Rights.
Now we come to domestic violent courts, 300 plus now that are in place and operating. According to a Judge Judith Kaye, they're not there to dispense justice, but they're there to facilitate punishment. How can we allow courts like this to continue?
Well, yes, this is a very disturbing phenomenon. It has not been brought out either in the debate over VAWA the way it should have been. Ironically, Mother Jones magazine, a pro VAWA, pro-feminist magazine, this month or in the current issue, writes about these courts and acknowledges that they are unconstitutional, that defendants are not permitted to face their accusers, that hearsay evidence is allowed, that there's no presumption of guilt. In some courts we found, I can show you documentary evidence, men are required to confess, to sign confessions. They are forced to sign confessions. And told they will be jailed if they do not sign confessions. This is exactly the kind of thing that comes out of the totalitarian regimes of Europe during the 20th century. The creation of special courts, Hitler's Volksgericht, the people's courts, the special courts of the Soviet Union, the special courts of the French Revolution. This is an old phenomenon in history of creating special courts to try special crimes to circumvent due process of law and established procedures. And that is precisely what the domestic violence industry is doing. And they're now talking about, in some jurisdictions, I believe they're actually talking about creating special courts for child support enforcement. So we have special courts to try special crimes in order to get more convictions.
So VAWA, as it sits, promotes the ideology of feminist organizations.
Well, yes, it does, actually. This money does go to, the VAWA money is dispersed to feminist groups throughout the United States, many of which have connections with other leftist groups and who actively lobby against conservatives and Republicans and so forth. So, it's very foolish on the part of conservative Republicans and Democrats to fund this legislation when it's simply it's creating a campaign war chest against them. And this is all, of course, illegal. The federal government, there are regulations preventing the use of federal funds for purposes of lobbying and influencing legislation and certainly of campaigning, during political campaigns, election campaigns. So this is a new phenomenon, and it's very improper. Actually, this trend has gotten further in Canada, where feminist groups are actually openly paid to lobby the Canadian federal government for their platform. So effectively, the government is paying groups to lobby itself. Which is contrary to our basic principles of government. Lobbying groups influencing legislation is supposed to be a private matter. Citizens and citizen groups can do that. The government is not supposed to be doing it on our behalf.
So explain the term vertical prosecution to us.
As I understand it, that's a good question. I'm trying to find out precisely what that does mean, vertical prosecution. It's something which is used in these domestic violence courts. As I understand it, it's a way of expediting prosecutions and therefore convictions by incorporating a lot of different things that may not be connected. For example, in cases of most domestic violence, of course, as we said, it takes place during custody disputes. So the purpose of these comprehensive domestic violence courts, they will include they'll settle the custody matter as well as the domestic violence, and perhaps the child support as well, is something we may see soon. So it seems to be a way of just basically declaring somebody to be a public enemy and an all-around bad person and finding some excuse to put them in jail.
Now, there is actually a difference in the way that men and women experience violence. Women experience violence less premeditated. Men experience violence more premeditated. Can you give us a breakdown on that and explain that to us a little bit?
First of all, one thing that needs to be said, when you see the figures for domestic violence, it is all, whether it's a government or academic study, they're all based on surveys. There is no central database of domestic violence, documented domestic violence. So if you're looking at Justice Department figures, these are also based on surveys. There's no central database that proves there are this many cases of domestic violence, this many against men and this many against women. And I don't think there ever can be such a database because the definition of domestic violence, which is used by the Justice Department, including the Bureau of Justice Statistics, is one that is very fluid, as we saw it earlier. So it's hard to say exactly what a domestic violence incident is. It's not necessarily a conviction or even a formal charge. Or even a prosecution. It's based on subjective understandings of what who was a victim of a domestic violence incident, which may or may not be a crime.
Now, is it not true that a lot of men will stay in an abusive situation longer than what women will, because a man knows that if a woman is battering him, that there is a greater chance that she will abuse the children?
Well, yes. Again, these things are subjective, and men do not report domestic violence incidents nearly as much as women. Men are much less likely to consider themselves to be a victim of a crime, and judges and prosecutors are much less likely to take them seriously if they do report it. And your other point is also true. Men are much, they know very well nowadays that they could very easily lose custody of the children. They could be prosecuted if they call the police over domestic violence. It could be them that ends up taken away in handcuffs, even if they didn't initiate it or didn't do anything. And they know very well that, yes, if they're taking away their children, they will have no control over where or how their children are treated. And their children could very easily be the subject of the objects of child abuse. So, yes, this is a very serious problem.
Do we actually find ourselves at a point of moral grandstanding over VAWA?
Oh, yes. Yes, I mean, we've been morally grandstanding over VAWA and anything to do with domestic violence, violence against women, child abuse. This is a huge industry of people who are making a lot of money, extending and expanding these problems. So you do have politicians who make political capital out of this. Absolutely. Many people don't realize how many organizations that do not purport to be feminist organizations have in fact been taken over by radical feminist groups. Perhaps the most the preeminent example today is Amnesty International. People think of Amnesty International or as being a, or the American Civil Liberties Union as being human rights or civil liberties groups. And they do deal with these issues, and sometimes, frankly, I think they deal with them in some cases well. But there's also a strong element of these organizations that have been taken over by radical feminist groups, involving issues like abortion or domestic violence, to the point where Amnesty International now is advocating VAWA, is lobbying in favor of a law which funds incarcerations without trial, which funds special courts, which funds the suspension of civil liberties, which funds forced confessions. The idea that a human rights organization should be advocating a bill which is highly repressive and flagrantly tramples people, the most basic human rights, is an indication of just how extreme the feminist takeover of these liberal organizations has become.
What's the future of our families if this goes through and is reauthorized?
Well, it depends on how it goes through. If it goes through and there is a gender equity or gender inclusive element to it, so that it is not a monopoly of extreme feminist groups, then there's the beginning of this monolith, I think, will be broken down. There's going to be a showdown over the family. This cannot continue. We cannot have the federal government increasingly paying to create problems for itself to solve, to create more child poverty, more child abuse, more family breakdown, and then coming along and claiming that it's got the answer, way to solve these problems, by spending more money, which in fact often ends up exacerbating the problem, making it worse. So we're in a vicious spiral where the government is destroying families and then claiming that it has ways of it's going to save them. This can't continue, and citizens are rising up against it. So sooner or later, and I think sooner, there's going to be a showdown over the family. It's becoming more and more critical.
Where do you think the showdown is going to happen?
I think it will happen over these issues. I think it will happen over divorce, child abuse, domestic violence, the child support system, the welfare system. These are the most destructive institutions in our society. These are the things that are threatening the family more than any other.
Do you see more activism spirit coming about now?
Yes, most definitely. Yes, parents groups are forming all over the country, false abuse charges and other false prosecutions for child abuse and for child support. So yes, there's a very strong uprising going on right now.
Well, Stephen Baskerville, Dr. Baskerville, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you.
I really appreciate it. I always enjoy having you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing, too.
All right. Well, you're listening to K-Rights Radio, where the truth continues.